Blog Talk Radio.
Mojuba Asheda, Mojuba Aluwa Mi, Apolabi Pega, Mojuba Araba Mi, Adesanya Awuyade, Mojuba Ogute Compound Ode Remo, Mojuba Baba, Mojuba Yeye, Mojuba Egun to all the God children, Mojuba Egun to all the Babalawos, the Ears, Mojuba Egungun to all the chiefs, Mojuba Egungun to all the Awos, Mojuba Egungun to all those that are listening, who are tuned in. We give praise and thanks to the Most High. We say Ashe, 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 Ashe,
Ashe,
Ashe, Ashe. Welcome to Sign of the Times, everyone. This is Queen Tahira. Sign of the Times is brought to you by the UAC, the United African Coalition for Justice and Human Rights. We began the UAC after the unjust Zimmerman verdict of 2013, and we invite everyone to participate in our weekly conference calls. They take place every Sunday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and the number to dial in is area code 712-432-1500, and the access code is 220 981-981-POUND. Again, that number every Sunday at 6:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Please call in, tell us what's going on in your neck of the woods. We are a national and soon to be international broadcast, so we want to hear from everybody. The number to dial is area code 712-432-1500, and the access code is 220-981-POUND. We also ask that you please support our sponsors, Manhood, Race, and Culture. Manhood, Race, and Culture is run by Dr. James Jones, and you can reach him on Facebook as James Jones, Manhood, Race, and Culture, and you can also reach out to him on the World Wide Web at manhoodraceculture.com. You also can support our second sponsor, Arlie Gordon of Unity Design. Unity Design is on Facebook as well as Arlie Gordon III. You can reach out to him on the World Wide Web at unitydesign.com, and Unity is spelled UNITEE. I'm having some difficulties in the studio, so we're going to turn this into a listening session just to keep things smoothly. The first clip that I'm going to play is from our sister Soldier, and it's called The Hate That Hate Produced. We are going to have part two of this dialogue tomorrow with Brothers of the Sun, so I thank you for your patience and your commitment to being here. We appreciate you, and if you'd like to speak, if you hear anything that's interesting, I will be monitoring the line. So please feel free to push one if you'd like to dialogue. This is Queen Tahira, and you're listening to Sign of the Times, brought to you by the New Power Radio Network. We'll be right back.
Here on Channel 13, we presented a five-part series which we called The Hate That Hate Produced, a study of the rise of black racism, of a call for black supremacy among a small but growing segment of the American Negro population. Tonight, because of the considerable interest evoked by the serialized version, we are repeating this disturbing story with additional film sequences which we did not have time to use last week. And then after the documentary portion of the program, Dr. Anna Hedgman, former administrative assistant to Mayor Robert Wagner, Arnold Forster of the Anti-Defamation League, Jackie Robinson, former Brooklyn Dodger star and now columnist for the New York Post, Roy Wilkins, executive secretary of the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People, and the Reverend Dr. Gardner Taylor, president of the Protestant Council of Greater New York. Five people with a particular and immediate interest in race relations will talk about what can be done about the tide of racism among this segment of the Negro population. So now, The Hate That Hate Produced. While city officials, state agencies, white liberals, and sober-minded Negroes stand idly by, a group of Negro dissenters is taking to street corner stepladders, church pulpits, sports arenas, and ballroom platforms across the United States to preach a gospel of hate that would set off a federal investigation if it were preached by Southern whites. What are they saying? Listen.
I charge the white man with being the greatest liar on earth. I charge the white man with being the greatest drunkard on earth. I charge the white man with being the greatest swine eater on earth. Yet the Bible forbids it. I charge the white man with being the greatest gambler on earth. I charge the white man, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, with being the greatest murderer on earth. I charge the white man with being the greatest peacemaker on earth. I charge the white man with being the greatest adulterer on earth. I charge the white man with being the greatest robber on earth. I charge the white man with being the greatest deceiver on earth. I charge the white man with being the greatest troublemaker on earth. So therefore, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, I ask you, bring back a verdict of guilty as charged.
The indictment you've just heard is being delivered over and over again in most of the major cities across the country. This charge comes at the climax of a morality play called The Trial. The plot, indeed the message of the play, is that the white man has been put on trial for his sins against the black man. He has been found guilty. The sentence is death. The play is sponsored, produced by a Negro religious group who call themselves the Muslims. They use a good deal of the paraphernalia of the traditional religion of Islam, but they are fervently disavowed by Orthodox Muslims. These homegrown Negro American Muslims are the most powerful of the black supremacist groups. They now claim a membership of at least 250,000 Negroes. Their doctrine is being taught in 50 cities across the nation. Let no one underestimate the Muslims. They have their own parochial schools, like this one in Chicago, where Muslim children are taught to hate the white man. Even the clothes they wear are in sharp contrast to American dress, like these two Negro children going to school. Wherever they go, the Muslims withdraw from the life of the community. They have their own stores, supermarkets, barbershops, restaurants. Here you see a progressive, modern, air-conditioned Muslim department store on Chicago's South Side. Their story of hatred for the white man is carried in many Negro newspapers. Here you see their minister, Malcolm X, proudly displaying five of the biggest Negro papers in America. Papers published in Los Angeles, New York, Pittsburgh, Detroit, and Newark. Negro politicians, regardless of their private beliefs, listen when the leaders of the black supremacist movement speak. Here, you see Manhattan Borough President Hewlett Jack shaking hands with Elijah Muhammad, the leader of the Muslims. And here is City Councilman Earl Brown addressing a Muslim rally. Four or five times a year, the Muslims assemble in one of America's major cities to hear their leader, Elijah Muhammad. This coming Sunday afternoon, they will gather at New York's St. Nicholas Arena to hear him. But here, you see them arriving at Washington's U-Line Arena for a meeting they held just 6 weeks ago. Every devout Muslim is eager to attend these meetings. For some time between now and 1970, and at just such a rally as this, the Muslim leader has intimated that he will give the call for the destruction of the white man. As you will see, every precaution is taken to protect their leader at these meetings. The Muslims, both men and women, submit themselves to a complete search before they finally enter the meeting hall. Some 10,000 persons attended the rally that you see here. All of them were searched. That's a search going on here. This process began 3 hours before the meeting started. And shortly, you will see Elijah Muhammad, founder and spiritual leader of the group. His flock is waiting for him now. And finally, here comes their spiritual leader, Elijah Muhammad. He's actually Elijah Poole of Hawkinsville, Georgia. During World War II, Muhammad was arrested and charged with sedition and draft dodging. The Department of Justice finally dropped the charge that he had advocated defeat of the white democracies and victory for the colored Japanese. But Muhammad and his followers did serve time in the federal penitentiary for refusing to register for the draft. Here you will hear Elijah Muhammad introduced by Minister Malcolm X, the Muslims' New York leader and ambassador at large for the movement. The good news that Minister X talks about here is the coming rise of the black man and the fall of the white man.
Everyone who is here today realizes that we are now living in the fulfillment of prophecy.
Right.
We have come to hear and to see the greatest and the wisest and most fearless black man in America today.
Right.
In the church, we used to sing the song, "Good News, the Chariot is Coming." Is that right or wrong? But what we must bear in mind, that what's good news to one person is bad news to another. While you sit here today, knowing that you have come to hear good news, you must realize in advance what's good news for you might be bad news for somebody else.
Right.
What's good news for the sheep might be bad news for the wolf.
The good news for the black man is that he is on the verge of recapturing his position as ruler of the universe. The bad news for the white man is that his long and wicked reign will shortly be over. And following this introduction, Elijah Muhammad, leader of the Muslims, speaks.
The Christian religion has failed. Leaders failed.
Right, sir.
Now the government of America has failed you. You have no justice coming from no one.
Right.
You ask, it is written, like peace came on the world. Every world taken up by it. You want justice. You want freedom. You want equality. But get none.
Following this speech, which lasted some 2 hours, Newsbeat reporter Lewis Lomax interviewed Elijah Muhammad, the spiritual leader of the Muslims.
Although you have said that the white race is doomed and that they are a race of devils, do you make any distinction? Are there any good white people? For example, suppose I were to ask you who you think is the best white man, is there any such thing?
I left the Bible that he says no, not one.
Now, if I have understood your teachings correctly, you teach that all of the members of Islam are God, and that one among you is supreme, and that that one is Allah. Now, have I understood you correctly?
That's right.
Now, you have, on the other hand, said that Allah has taught you that the devil is the white man, that
yes.
The white man is a doomed race.
Yes.
Am I correct there?
Yes.
Now you have said, sir, that between now and approximately 1970, there should come a reawakening,
a general resurrection
of the American Negro.
That's right.
And that the extended time for the white man may well run out, and that that will come, and in terms of a war between God and the devil, this coming destruction of the white man. Will there be any bloodshed involved in this, or will it be a complete mental thing?
According to the teachings of the prophets of old and of God himself, there will be plenty of bloodshed. Plenty of it.
Have you ever been accused, sir, of preaching hate?
Yes.
Do you think you are preaching hate?
No.
What are you preaching, sir?
Truth.
And if the truth is irritable or
classified as hate, then I cannot help that.
But of even more interest to New Yorkers is Malcolm X, the Muslims' New York minister. He is a remarkable man, a man who, by his own admission, was once a procurer and dope peddler. He served time for robbery in the Michigan and Massachusetts state penitentiaries. But now he's a changed man. He will not smoke or drink. He will not even eat in a restaurant that houses a tavern. He told Newsbeat that his life changed for him when the Muslim faith taught him no longer to be ashamed of being a black man. Reporter Lewis Lomax asked Minister Malcolm X to further explain the Muslim teachings of Elijah Muhammad.
That in the same context that Mr. Elijah Muhammad teaches that his faith, that the Islamic faith is for the black man and that the black man is good, he also uses the Old Testament instance of the serpent and Adam and Eve in the Garden of Eden, and he sets up the proposition there that this is the great battle between good and evil, and he uses the phrase devils.
Yes.
And he uses it almost interchangeably and synonymous with the word serpent. Now, what does he mean there?
Well, number one, he teaches us that that never was a real serpent.
It was not a real serpent
that went into the garden.
What was it?
But as you know, the Bible is written in symbols and parables, and this serpent or snake is a symbol that's used to hide the real identity of the one whom that actually was.
Well, who was it?
The white man.
I want to call your attention, Minister Malcolm, to one paragraph in this column. He says, and I quote him, "The only people born of Allah are the black nation, of whom the so-called American Negroes are descendants."
Yes.
Now, is this your standard teaching?
Yes. He teaches us that the black man, by nature, is divine,
Now, does this mean that the white man by nature is evil?
By nature, he is other than.
Well, now, does this mean that he's evil? Can he do good?
By nature, he is evil.
He cannot do good.
History is best qualified to reward all research, and we don't have any historic example where we have found that they collectively, as a people, have done good.
Mr. Malcolm, you now in Chicago and in Detroit have universities of Islam, do you not?
Yes, sir, in Detroit and Chicago.
And you take your parishioners, you take children from the kindergarten ages, and you train them right through high school.
Yes, sir.
True.
From the age of four, I think it is, upward.
And you have a certified parochial school operating in Chicago?
In Chicago
and in Detroit.
And in Detroit.
And kids come to your school in lieu of going to what we would call regular day school?
Yes, sir, many.
What do you teach them there?
We teach them the same things that they would be taught ordinarily in school, minus the little black Sambo story and things that were taught to you and me when we were coming up to breed that inferiority complex in us.
Do you teach them what you just said to me, that the white man is a symbol of evil?
You can go to any little Muslim child and ask him, where is hell or who is the devil? And he wouldn't tell you that hell is down in the ground or that the devil is something invisible that you can't see. He'll tell you hell is right where he has been catching it, and he'll tell you who the one who is responsible for him having received this hell is the devil.
And he would say that this devil is the white man.
Yes.
Can a white man join your temple?
None have ever joined.
If one came up and attempted to join, would he be allowed to come in and be taught?
Oh, no, sir.
Why not?
Well, that's one of the reasons why most people think that Mr. Muhammad teaches hate. But if there is a rattlesnake in the field who has been biting your brothers and your sisters, and you go and tell them that that's a rattlesnake, and all of the harm that has ever come to them has come to them from that particular source, well, then that rattler will think that the warner is teaching hate. He'll go back and tell the other snakes that this man is teaching hate, this man is teaching hate, but it's not hate. It's just that when you study people who have been harmed and discover the source of their injury, the source of all of their defects, and you begin to point out that source, it's not that you hate the source, but your love for your people is so intense, so great, that you must let them know what is wrong with them, what is the cause of their ills. And this is one of the basic factors, I believe, involved when people think, or when the propaganda is put out, that Mr. Muhammad teaches hate. He teaches black people to love each other. And our love for each other is so strong, we don't have any room left in our heart.
What do you think of the NAACP?
Islam is a natural religion, and it is difficult to find a black body with a white head and classify that body as something that's natural. Most organizations that represent the so-called Negro, usually we find when we study them that though they are supposed to be for us the leadership or the brain power or the political power or whatever power that runs it, usually it's the white man.
We have thus seen Muslim leaders in reflective moments and as they talk to members of their own flock. But what about their approach to non-Muslim Negroes? 3 months ago, Minister Malcolm X was invited to speak at a Harlem rally celebrating African Freedom Day. His audience was composed chiefly of Christian Negroes with a lively interest in African affairs. We've obtained film segments of that speech. The film was made under adverse circumstances, but you will be able to hear and understand Minister Malcolm X as he addresses a non-Muslim audience.
Who is his enemy? He'll say the Belgians. Ask the man in Kenya, who is his enemy? He'll say the British. Ask the man in Morocco, who is his enemy? He'll say the French. But the one thing that the French and the British and the Belgians all have in common, they're all from Europe. Is that right or wrong? How could so few white people rule so many black people? This is the thing you should want to know. How could so few? The white man today will tell you that thousands of years ago, the black man in Africa was living in palaces. The black man in Africa was wearing silk. The black man in Africa was cooking and seasoning his food. The black man in Africa had mastered the arts and the sciences. He knew the course of the stars and the universe before the man up in Europe knew that the earth wasn't flat. Is that right or wrong? Then if the black man in Africa had reached such a high state of civilization so long ago, at a time when the people of Europe were crawling on their all fours, what happened to make these people or enable these people to come out of the cave and come down into our civilization and take it over and hitch us to the plow? What happened? How did they do it? These are the things you should want to find out before you say hooray, hooray, hooray. Is that right or wrong?
This is the psychology of the Muslims. They know that the American Negro is angry because he's been cast in an inferior role. And they seek to convert him to the Muslim cause by drenching him in a doctrine of black supremacy. These then are the Muslims. These are the things they are saying, preaching, teaching their children. And they are the most powerful of the black supremacist groups. But now, let us look at another group. Every night, when the weather is good, knots of people gather in Harlem at 125th Street and 7th Avenue in front of the Teresa Hotel to hear the speakers for the United African Nationalist Movement spread their gospel of black nationalism. We made a film of one of those meetings. The lighting was poor. It was difficult to get good sound quality. The man you're about to hear is John Davis, a paid orator for the United African Nationalist Movement. You will hear him attack white liberals, Eleanor Roosevelt, Pearl Buck, and then we'll go on to say some rather surprising things about the NAACP and its leader, Roy Wilkins.
I tell it to you like it is. And now you got what they call so-called white liberals. That's supposed to be your friend. And these white liberals go around claiming that they are against discrimination. They are against lynching. Of all the brutality. Liberals like Tony Miss Roosevelt, the African white goddess. Is that right or wrong?
I give it to you like it is.
You got another one by the name of Pearl Buck. And what's this woman that wrote? Imitation of Life. Tiny Hush. Phony liberals.
I'll tell you like it is.
Then you got the NAACP, the National Association for the Advancement of Some Colored Folks. And you got Uncle Tom Roy Wilkins.
Hey,
am I right or wrong?
Yeah.
The leader of the United African Nationalist Movement is James R. Lawson, sometimes public relations man and black nationalist, a man who says he has authorization to bring greetings from the United Arab Republic's President Nasser to black nationalist groups here in America. Newsbeat asked Mr. Lawson to explain the nature of his organization and its aims. As Lawson talks with reporter Lomax, you will see the strong pro-Arab feeling that pervades the teachings of the black racists.
The United African Nationalist Movement. It is an organization of people of African descent here in America. However, we have associated organizations throughout the Caribbean, Africa, and the Middle East.
Can a non-African or non-Negro person join your organization?
No,
he cannot. Why not?
Because this is an organization of people of African blood or descent.
Are you anti-white?
Well, I think you ought to ask white people, they're anti-black.
But are you anti-white?
I don't think I'm anti-white, but I'm pro-black.
I have here the March 12, 1959 edition of the Los Angeles Herald Dispatch, a Negro newspaper. On the front page, there's an article, the title of which says, Negro nationalist James R. Lawson, and that's you,
mm-hmm.
guest of Mohammed.
Mm-hmm.
It has a Chicago dateline, and it goes on to say that you delivered greetings to Mr. Elijah Mohammed on the occasion of his third Founders Day in Chicago. Is this report accurate?
I delivered greetings not to Mr. Mohammed, but to the convention gathered by our people and the leadership.
You spoke to the gathering of the Muslim group in Chicago.
That's right.
Did you bring them greetings from General Nasser of Egypt?
Also from President Tubman of Liberia.
But you did bring them greetings from General Nasser?
Sure.
Did General Nasser know that you were bringing greetings from him to this group?
You know that I bring greetings not only to this group, but to many groups, not only on behalf of him, but on behalf of President Tubman, sometimes on behalf of Emperor Haile Selassie. Any group of people gathered of African descent.
Did General Nasser recently invite you to come to Egypt as his guest?
Certainly.
Are you going?
I may.
You haven't made up your mind one way or the other?
I've just about made up my mind. I'm not ready to announce it, though.
But you have made up your mind?
Oh, yes.
Do you think that Nasser is the leader in Africa?
In that part of Africa, yes.
Are you,
there are many leaders in Africa.
Are you eager to help Nasser?
I'm eager to help anybody that will help in bringing about the freedom of Africa.
You are on once having said that you didn't ask Nasser to help you, that you wanted to help Nasser.
That is true. I want to help not only Nasser, but
what
I
did you want to help Nasser do?
Free Africa.
From what?
Colonialism. White domination.
Do you favor integration?
No.
Do you favor the NAACP?
No.
Do you think Roy Wilkins is a good leader of his people?
Roy Wilkins is not the leader. Arthur Spingarn is the leader.
And what is Arthur Spingarn?
He's an honest Jew.
Mr. Lawson, were you present at the meeting when Dr. Ralph Bunche of the United Nations got up to introduce Prime Minister Nkrumah?
Sure I was. Don't you remember you ran up to me asking a question? I was with my family, my wife and two children.
But as I recall the incident, Dr. Bunche was roundly booed when he stood up. Is that correct?
That is true.
Mr. Lawson, who booed Ralph Bunche and why?
I think the people booed him. That's what it looked like to me.
Do you know any of the people who booed
him? Sure.
Do you know why they booed him?
I don't know exactly why, but I have a hunch.
What's your hunch, sir?
My hunch is that the black people, those of African descent in this country, consider Ralph Bunche a kind of George Washington of Israel. The man who made 1 million people that are closely related to them homeless and hasn't done a cockeyed thing for the black man.
Now, you say the black people believe that. Do you, James R. Lawson, believe that Ralph Bunche is the George Washington of Israel?
Well, I know he is.
So speaks James Lawson, president of the United African Nationalist Movement. One of the rallying cries of these black extremists is the alleged failure of Christianity. They call it a doctrine of enslavement. Many of them have abandoned Christianity, and those who haven't abandoned it preach that Jesus was not white. Not white like the men who lynch Negroes, but that he was black. We'll be back to continue the hate that hate produced with the treatment of the black racists' attitudes towards Christianity in just a moment after these commercial messages. And now back to our story. These black supremacists, Muslims and black nationalists, are not practitioners of hate just for hate's sake. They did not grow in a vacuum. Rather, theirs is the hate that hate has produced. The hate that some Negroes are returning for the hate most American Negroes have received for the past 300 years. The burden of being a black man in America has proved more than some of them can bear. And so now they are fighting back with the same weapons that were used to subjugate them. They're finding it, some of them, increasingly difficult to identify with America. They've lost faith in the honesty of American law enforcement agencies when it comes to protecting their individual rights. Many of them have abandoned Christianity and have named it a dogma of enslavement. Even those who have not abandoned it are preaching that Jesus was not white, like the men who lynch and discriminate against Negroes, but that he was a black man. James Lawson shows the black supremacist's concept of Jesus. And notice how much the Jesus in the painting and James Lawson resemble one another.
Mr. Lawson, in conjunction with your remarks that the Negro needs a black God, or at least some image he can identify with, I wonder if you tell me what this picture is and what it's all about.
Well, we don't mean a black God. We know that God is spirit. But this is a painting
the concept of an artist of Jesus in the Garden of Gethsemane. And, you know, Solomon himself said, look not upon me because I'm black and comely. And someone else is quoted, I think, in Revelation where it says, his hair is like a lamb's wool and his feet like polished brass. Therefore, we feel that we're on sound ground when we refer to Jesus as possibly being a black man. After all, Jesus was of the tribe of Judea.
The American Negro has never quite forgotten that he became a slave and a Christian at the same time. For a good many of them, this is something they feel deeply but don't often talk about. But for the Muslims and the black nationalists, the alleged failure of Christianity is an obsession. And they talk bitterly of this alleged failure to power their cause. Listen to John Davis, paid orator for the United African Nationalist Movement, as he sets the theme. He begins by talking of a sleeping child. And then he talks of Mac Parker, the Negro who was lynched recently in Mississippi, and he calls for an end to the brainwashing imposed by the Christian religion.
You are still a sleeping child, and you'll be all right as soon as they get religion out of you. When they take this religion out of you and brainwash you about this Jesus and this hereafter, you'll be all right. Do you know that Maxine Parker's mother believed in God, but she believed in the wrong God? That's how come Mac is dead. If Maxine Parker's mother, now remember, I didn't say for you not to believe in God. I said, get this white man's religion out of you.
But it is Elijah Muhammad, spiritual leader of the white-hating Muslims, who make the bitterest attacks on Christianity. And it might be well to point out again here that traditional Muslims fervently disavow Elijah Muhammad's homegrown brand of Islam. The Orthodox Muslim is quick to affirm that there is no hate in his religion, and that man of whatever color or nationality is welcome in his faith.
That is a white man's religion. It is not for you and I.
Yes, sir.
There is no salvation in Christianity for black.
Yes, sir.
It has failed to give you justice. The solace to your preachers and your church, pleading to the government for justice to get none. Regardless to your prayers for the Father and the Son, you get no justice.
All right, sir.
Then what good is Christianity to you and I? If the religion and the God of that religion will not, if him not, against laws, against righteous, against rapers,
what will be a father?
After the speech in Uline Arena, Elijah Muhammad elaborated on his charges against Christianity for reporter Lomax.
Christians, then?
No.
Do you think that Christianity is a religion of deliverance for the black man?
No.
Do you think that Christianity has been a religion of enslavement for the black man?
Yes.
What do you think of the...
It was Christian fathers who enslaved our fathers. They're always Christians. In fact, about it, the white race is really the Christians, as we refer to them. I could never be a Christian, though I joined Christianity, but I could never be a Christian unless I was white.
You don't think a black man can be a Christian, sir?
By nature, we are not Christian. By nature, we are born Muslims.
Do you think this is our natural faith?
It's the natural religion of man, according to the teachings of the Holy One, 30 and 30.
Sir, about how many so-called American Negroes have you been able to convert during the years of your teaching?
Oh, that runs into hundreds of thousands. But that don't mean they all have continued to follow on with it. But there has been hundreds of thousands taught.
Thus the story is told, a small but growing segment of the American Negro population has learned to hate before the Christian white man could learn to love. But what do Negro Christian leaders say? Do they too believe that Christianity has failed the Negro? Is it an instrument of subjugation? Reporter Lomax put these questions to the Reverend Adam Clayton Powell, pastor of the world's largest Protestant congregation.
Believe that Christianity, and since you are a Protestant, I will put it in that context, do you believe that Protestantism has been the Negro's friend? Do you think that it has functioned as a religion of deliverance for Negroes, or has it been guilty of dragging its feet, so to speak, on this question?
Well, again, I'd like to say that the words of Jesus weren't aimed at Protestants only, they were aimed at all people, Protestants and Catholics, who believe in Christianity. So I would therefore like to answer your question against that background. I believe that Christianity in the United States has been dragging its feet. I don't think there is any other force in America that has been more detrimental to the solution of our racial problems than Christianity, because you cannot expect the man in the street to practice Christianity better than his priest or his pastor in the pulpit. And the fact that there is more segregation in the United States of America on Sunday morning at 11 o'clock than at any other time in our national life is the tragic proof of what I'm stating.
And so it becomes easier for us to understand why talk of integration has become a kind of wistful pie in the sky for a growing number of Negroes. Easier to understand why they turn to the Muslims, a group they believe will do something for them. Why they lose patience with NAACP talk of gradual integration when what they want is immediate equality and separation. Is this black supremacist doctrine making headway among New York Negroes? Let's go to the streets of Harlem and find out.
This is classified as hate when we are telling our people that it is time for them to organize and learn to develop respect, recognition for themselves, in order that they might obtain a position of self-determination. If this is what is classified as hate, then I suppose I am guilty of preaching such a philosophy.
I've listened to the Elijah Muhammad movement and the Black Nationalist movement, and I have heard the NAACP, and I don't feel that the NAACP's views are the way out. I feel that it would be better if it were more national rather than integrated with the views of the white man in it, for the simple reason that I think that together with our own people, more can be accomplished rather than with the white man involved in it also, because as it is, we've already been accepting too many crumbs from this man, and we've never really gotten a real loaf of bread from him. The only thing I disagree with the NAACP about is that we've been waiting long enough. The Supreme Court handed down a decision in 1954, and we're still waiting for our schools to be integrated in the South. I've read some of Mr. Muhammad's articles in the Pittsburgh Courier. He is a Muslim. I agree with him. He says we've been waiting long enough.
Only recently that the people that have been listening to these speakers have become more tense, to the extent that when they read newspapers about brutality in the South, women are being beat with clubs in Africa. And everywhere you read the headlines, black people are being beat, lynched, killed, for no reason at all. And they began to get nervous about it, and somebody needs to do something, and that is quick.
We asked NAACP Executive Secretary Roy Wilkins if these extremists are involved in the recent racial unrest up in Harlem.
Preaching of racial hatred and racial advantage and the bigotry involved is a bad thing, whether it's colored or white. Now, for years, the NAACP has been opposed to white extremists preaching hatred of Negro people, and we are equally opposed to Negro extremists preaching against white people simply for the sake of whiteness. Now, what effect this has had on the Harlem community, I can't say, because many police incidents have taken place in Harlem, and I believe that a sort of community attitude has been built up. It may be that these extremists have sharpened it and have recruited some more extremists to their banner. If so, that would be deplorable.
Then we tried to find out what is the political impact, the political strength of these black supremacists. And this is what we discovered. Their influence far outruns their numbers. They're vocal. They get out on the streets and stir up sentiment. During political campaigns, they choose candidates, and their street corner speakers weave political campaigning in and out of their black supremacist teachings. Reporter Lomax asked James Lawson, president of the United African Nationalist Movement, to what extent his group supported such politicians as Congressman Adam Clayton Powell and Manhattan Borough President Jack.
Participate in the politics of Harlem.
Oh, sure.
Do you support candidates actively?
Very seldom.
But on some occasions you do support candidates?
When we feel that the issues are great enough.
Well, I think perhaps Adam Clayton Powell is the best known politician in Harlem. Have you supported Adam Clayton Powell?
In the last election.
You did support him in the last election?
Yes.
Did you actively support him on the streets?
Yeah.
What does Adam Powell think of you?
Well, you'd have to ask the congressman that.
Has he ever given you any indication what he thinks of you?
Oh, he has.
For example?
Well, he wasn't able to attend the African Freedom Day rally, and he did write a very fine tribute to the United African Nationalist Movement and its leadership.
That's you and your organization?
No, I said the United African Nationalist Movement and its leadership.
Yes.
I happen to be the president.
Yes. Is it true that he recently wrote you a letter in which he indicated what he thought of you personally?
Well, yes. I think it was involving issues, and there were very fine and wonderful phrases coming from both the minister and the congressman.
Well, without breaching any confidences, can you tell us, in essence, what he said about you in the letter he wrote to you?
Well, he said that he felt that the United African Nationalist Movement was doing a great job in the struggle for the liberation of Africa, the program of Africa for the Africans, those at home and those abroad. And he felt that many things wouldn't have been done if it wasn't for the existence of this organization.
Now, do you have the same kind of feeling and relationship with regard to Borough President Ewing Jack?
Yes. Yes. I'll tell you the truth. You know, we're all members of the same order.
All members of the same order.
Well, the Order of the Star of Ethiopia.
Did you support Borough President Ewing Jack in the last election?
Yes.
Should he be a candidate in the coming election, will you support him then?
Oh, we expect him to be a candidate.
And you expect to support him?
We expect not only to support him because we know that there are many people after getting the Borough Presidency away from our people here in Harlem.
Then reporter Lomax asked both Adam Powell and Hewlin Jack about Mr. Lawson's statements.
Mr. Lawson told us that on several occasions he has supported you in your campaigns.
True.
And on one occasion he said he received a letter from you in which you gave him your blessings. I think he was on his
way. He was on the way to the All African People's Congress in Accra, Ghana, which was held last December 12th.
Should one take this to mean that you approve of him and what he's doing, what he's saying?
No, I don't approve of any form of extremism, but I again say that I believe in the right of all people to follow whatever doctrine they believe in, and the right for me to oppose or to support.
The Amsterdam News quotes you from a speech delivered at a rally sponsored in Harlem by the United African Nationalist Movement. The rally was commemorating African Freedom Day, I believe. And you are quoted as having said, "Henceforth, we are no longer Negroes, but rather Americans of African descent." Is this an accurate quotation?
Yes, Mr. Lomax.
Do you really feel this way, sir?
I do feel that way.
Do you proudly associate yourself with African nationalist movement?
No, as borough president of Manhattan, I have been asked by that group to issue a proclamation, and I was happy to do it because of the fact that it indicated a certain date which was designated not by me, but publicly designated as the day known as African Day.
So you have issued, I believe, in the past 2 years, two or more proclamations for the United African Nationalist Movement. One on Garvey Day, I believe, and then later one for African Freedom Day. Is this true, sir?
Yes. Well, all of us are certainly in knowledge of the contribution made by Marcus Garvey.
Yes. Now, let me see if I understand you correctly. Are you saying, sir, that you are not a member of the United African Nationalist Movement, but that you do consider these people a substantial, respected group in the community, and that you acceded to their request to issue proclamations? Is this what
you're saying? That's quite right, Mr. Lomax.
Well, what do Congressman Powell and Borough President Jack know about the Muslims? Reporter Lomax asked both men to comment on the Muslims and their teachings. The exchange begins as Hugh and Jack admits that he welcomed Elijah Muhammad to New York, and then that he, Jack, spoke at a Muslim rally.
Yes, I greeted him as borough president of Manhattan.
Should this be taken to mean that you agree with his religious, political, economic philosophy?
I know nothing about Mohammedanism. I have never sought to know anything about it.
You spoke at one of his meetings, didn't you?
I spoke as president of the borough of Manhattan and expressed the greetings of the borough of Manhattan to this man who had come here for the meeting of these people.
At the meetings, what did you say? Did you support the Muslim movement? Did you support them in their notions that the white man is a snake and a devil and should be destroyed?
I have no reason in the world to support that idea, because this world has on it white men, black men, yellow men, brown men, and all must live together in peace and harmony, and that has been my background ever since I've known my existence.
If I understand you properly, you have said to me that you issue these plaques, that you attend these meetings because as borough president of Manhattan you have to recognize the existence of these groups. Is that correct?
Yes.
Now, sir, with no harm meant, but if the White Citizens Council had a meeting, would you give them a plaque? Would you attend their meeting and speak?
Well, the White Citizens Council is not in existence in Manhattan, and certainly should have no reason for existence.
Congressman, I want to return again to the Muslims of whom we spoke earlier. You say you know Minister Malcolm X.
Yes.
And you respect him as a very brilliant man.
I think he's a very brilliant man.
They teach, and he said it to this reporter, among other things, that the proper interpretation of the incident in the Garden of Eden is that Adam and Eve were black men and that the serpent was a white man who came in and, to say the least, brought on disquietude, and that the white man is not a devil but the devil, a snake of the grafter type, and must be destroyed. How does this sound?
I totally disassociate myself from any such belief, just as I totally disassociate myself from the belief of some of my fellow clergymen who preach that there is no room in Christianity for a black man except as a servant and a slave.
But Congressman, in all 20th century seriousness, would it disturb you if the reverse took place, if a white group had such a school and they were teaching their children that Negroes were snakes and devils and should be destroyed? In all seriousness, sir, wouldn't that disturb you?
Oh, it disturbs me that he preaches that kind of doctrine of hate, because I don't know of any religion that has in it a principle of hatred. There are various degrees of love, but not any degrees of hate.
The man called brilliant at the beginning of that colloquy by Adam Powell, the man who preached a vesper service in Adam Powell's church, this man, Malcolm X, is, as we said, by his own admission, a former dope peddler and procurer, an ex-convict who served time in Michigan and Massachusetts prisons. He is now a changed man, he says, because Elijah Muhammad's personal brand of Islam taught him no longer to be ashamed to be a black man. So it becomes evident that responsible leaders of the Negro community are fully aware of the activities and the teachings of the black supremacists. Now we ask, In what measure has the white man earned the hate of these extremists? To what extent does Christianity deserve to be called by these groups the religion of enslavement? To place this aspect of our story in perspective, Newsbeat visited Dr. Anna Arnold Hedgman. When the ideal of integration was just a timid dream for the Negro, Anne Hedgman was executive director of the National Committee for a Permanent FEPC. She has served with distinction as administrative aide to the Federal Security Administration of Oscar Ewing and to New York's Mayor Robert Wagner. Dr. Hedgman lives among her fellow Negroes. She knows their problems. Newsbeat reporter Lou Lomax asks Dr. Hedgman her opinion of the creed of black supremacy.
Dr. Hedgman, how long have you lived in Harlem?
About 30 years.
Then you are thoroughly familiar with the goings-on in the Harlem community.
Now, I don't know what you mean by goings-on, Louie, but I'm very familiar with Harlem, I would say.
Now, Dr. Hedgman, let's get down to brass tacks, so to speak. What would be your reaction if a white group held a rally at 42nd and Broadway and said the kinds of things about Negroes that these street corner orators are saying about whites and Jews?
First of all, I would be opposed to it no matter who did it. I want that on the record. However, the situations are not analogous.
Why aren't they analogous?
For the very simple reason that America has bottled up the Negro in such fashion that what he pours out is his complete reaction to frustration on the one hand and his objection to much of the unintelligent way in which he has been handled as an American.
But aren't you saying this, that previous condition of servitude or state of persecution justifies the preaching of race hate, whereas the absence of this historical business does not justify it?
No, I did not say it's justified. I said this is the reason.
Well, is it right?
Absolutely it's not right, no matter who does it.
Does it offend the democratic ethic?
Yes, but you see, America's policy defends it.
But what about the attacks on Christianity, both by the Muslims and the black nationalists? Reporter Lomax learned that Dr. Hedgman herself, in a recent speech, had commented on the color of Jesus' skin.
During a recent speech before a group of graduate nurses, I believe, you said, and I hope I quote you correctly, God may not be black.
Not God.
But he certainly isn't white. Is that
Jesus,
a direct quote?
We're talking about Jesus, actually.
Yes. What is your quote on that?
My quote is that Jesus may not have been black, but he certainly was not white.
Is it important?
Very important.
Why?
I think maybe some of us like to say, as Christians, that there's no picture of Jesus in the Bible because everybody then could claim him. And you see, you claim when pressure has been put upon you to claim things in terms of color, as it has in this country. You want a piece of this guy who was a terrific prophet.
And to have a piece of him, so to speak,
a little like you, yes.
Physically.
Just a little, yes, because America...
Not in terms of mind or spirit or belief.
Physically, too, because America has made this important, you see. We've made this important everywhere. One goes down the streets in Bombay and sees the models, not brown Indian girls, but Anglo-Saxon girls, because the British then were in control.
Well, now, when you say that this color factor should emerge, isn't this, in a sense, a return to tribalisms?
America is about at the tribalistic stage, yes.
You really believe that?
Yes, yes, color-wise, on this issue of color, yes. America, I don't know why white people are so absolutely wound up on this business, but it has to be white. If you could manage it, you ought to be white with blue eyes and blonde hair.
So we learn that a growing segment of the Negro population is losing faith in the American dream. They reject the designation of Negro. They consider themselves rather Americans of African descent. And reporter Lomax asks Dr. Hedgman to explain why.
Speaking of these forces, these groups in Harlem are now preaching something of a nationalist gospel. They are saying that the American Negro should, in a sense, identify himself with Africa. How do you feel about this?
I feel, again, this is the temper of the world today. Everybody is looking for something which belongs to him. And this is the thing that the American Negro looks for. He wanted it to be America, because he's the most American of any group here.
Why doesn't he identify with America?
America has never permitted, thou shalt not this, thou shalt not that, reserved for whites only, remember? You should ask me this question.
Well, do you feel that the American Negro is an African?
Of course. course he's part African.
But isn't he part something else?
Oh, he's many other things. He actually, you know, is the only, he's the real American.
Then why?
He's some of everything.
Then why isolate Africa to identify with? Why not identify with some other source of one's culture?
Because the largest portion of him is African.
And there you have it. Tragic and irrefutable evidence that a small but growing segment of the American Negro population is giving ear to a flagrant doctrine of black supremacy. I think that we've stated our basic convictions about the matter when we entitled this program, The Hate That Hate Produced. Even so, it is still hate, organized hate. Before asking our panel what can be done about the rising tide of black supremacy movements, I'd like to talk for a minute with my colleague Lou Lomax, who did the research and the interviews for this story. Lou, you've written for such magazines as The New Leader, The Nation, Pageant. As a staff writer for the Chicago American, you covered the school integration disputes in Clinton, Tennessee, and Sturgis Clay, Kentucky, Little Rock. How would you compare this assignment with others that you've been on?
Mike, this one was a little rough. Whenever you are covering a story that involves the emotions of people, there's always an element of danger. This is the first time I think my color's ever been in my favor rather than against me, but on the whole, I would say that this assignment was a little rough.
Rough in what sense?
Well, let me give you a couple of instances. The night we did the piece on the Harlem street corner where you heard Mr. Davis and the phony liberals bit, I had with me the camera crew and Dan Meenan and Sandy Goodman of our staff. All of them are white. We were, in a sense, menaced. They were called bad names. I was called a dirty, no good nigger who brought the people up to spy, this kind of thing. A crowd gathered, and we were a little bit apprehensive. In Washington, for the Muslim rally, I was all right. The camera crew, again, was white. They were in a little bit of danger, and one or two times the cameraman wandered away from the camera, and some of the Muslims came up to me and said, "You are responsible for these white men, and we don't want them running around loose. You better go with them wherever they're going."
As you see it, Lou, why is it that some Negroes, these Negroes we've been talking about tonight, have returned hate for hate, while others have not?
Well, I think one of the reasons is that the Christian notion of turning the other cheek has stuck. This is one reason why the Muslims must undo Christianity, so to speak, if they are to succeed. And then recent advancements in race relations, from the integrationist's point of view, these advancements have justified the sober-minded Negro's faith. Then there is this, Mike. We Negroes have invested quite a bit in America. It's not my fault that we're here, and it's not your fault as a white man that the race problem exists. America was born with a race problem, and we've helped to eliminate it. Our backs have borne a great deal of the burden, and the general feeling is that America is on the upbeat, that we're going up, that our country is getting better, and I see no point in turning our backs upon America now. It's like pushing the wagon up the hill and then refusing to ride down. And I think this is the attitude of most Negroes. I hope so, anyway.
Thank you, Lou, and we'll be back with you in just a moment. Well, there is our story and our reporter's comment on it. But the ultimate burden of all of this rests on the New York community, Negro and white. And we have asked five members of that community to join Mr. Lomax and me to discuss the implications of this story. And we'll begin that discussion in just a couple of minutes after these commercial messages.
He's written a book called The Message to the Black Man in America, which will soon be published. And we have used this book to base a number of our questions to Mr. Muhammad. Mr. Muhammad, in this book you make a number of stipulations of which we would like to press you on in the course of the session today. One, you call for the separation of the Negro into a separate state, either in this United States or made possible by the United States. Two, you say that war between the white and the blacks is inevitable.
Yes. I'm very glad to answer these questions, Mr. Cobb, to you and to the world. They are most essential that we should give the world the answer to such questions. I have been preaching and teaching the answers to these questions for many years. I give thanks first, Mr. Cup, to God, who came in the person of Master Farad Muhammad around 34 years ago now to me. And all that I have and been teaching, it is from him. And it is very easy for us to recognize the visit of this mighty one according to the time. If we have the knowledge of the time that we are living in, we can accept and respect this mighty visitor in this part of the world to fulfill that which was written of him, that he will come. And now he has come, and he has given out his purpose and his aims, as it also is written in the Bible and Quran. And therefore, I have nothing of myself in this answer. It is all from him.
From him, you mean the messenger of Allah?
No, not the messenger of Allah. I am the messenger of Allah. I mean from Allah himself, who came in the person of Master Farad Muhammad,
who preceded you as the head of the Muslims.
Well, he was actually the beginner. Yes, sir. And I'm taught by him. This separation we begin with, it is absolutely necessary. We have lived here in America for the last 400 years and have served our slave masters well before these past 100 years. And now the time has arrived that we want something for ourselves. The natural spirit of God is moving in us and making us to think in such terms towards self. And the doing for self is now getting into the very life of the black man in America. He wants to go for self. We want to be ourselves. This is aroused in us by God himself. And to oppose it means nothing but death to either side. If we oppose it, it's death for us. If others oppose it, it's death to them.
But even your own people oppose it, Mr. Muhammad, if I may interject a thought here. Most of the civil rights leaders with whom I know you disagree, Dr. Martin Luther King, Whitney Young, and Roy Wilkins, and James Farmer, and any number of others, all believe in integration, getting along with the whites and moving into the same society.
This is all due to their lack of knowledge of the time and what should be done in such time. They don't know that this is their time, that they should be separated, that they should go for themselves. This is what I'm trying to teach them. Teach them that this is the time that they should go for themselves.
But is it not, would you disagree that it is the ambition and the goal of most Negroes in this country to become Americans in every meaning of that word, to participate in our society, to be responsible, legitimate, honest citizens? Isn't that the goal of the overwhelming number of Negroes in this country?
It may be their goal, Mr. Cup, because that they don't even know, as I just said, that this is the time that they should be going for self. And lack of knowledge of the time, the lack of knowledge of self. The American so-called Negro, especially the leading class, do not actually know themselves. Excuse my voice, as I'm a little trying to be a little hoarse this morning, but however, I may clear it up later. America's so-called Negro, as you know, have been kept in the dark of the truth of self and kind for now 400 years, and the only one to break forth this truth, it is God himself, as it is written. And the Bible, Ezekiel, and prophesied by Jesus, that the dead must rise, mentally dead. So our so-called leadership is as dumb as those they are leading to this knowledge. Therefore, they hopes that they could have a place somewhere in the life of the white man of America and in his country and government. They seek that place. Not that they seek some portion of the country, but here, they seek only recognition of the white man as being a citizen of America and being his equal. This is the wrong thing to be seeking. Since we now have served our pathetic term of slavery here in America, and now we have a taste of education of the slave masters and their children, we don't go now to the colleges and universities of the white man looking for degrees to go back to him then for a job, to work, live with him, or some bird in the bird line.
Well, what is wrong with that ambition, Mr. Muhammad? It seems to be working out and growing.
He's almost a subject, a servant all the time. He's not getting an equal place with his master by seeking a job. The only thing that he should seek now, since he admits that he's free, and he is free. He's not no more a servant or slave.
But
he's free.
The growing number of Negroes who have achieved prominence in all the spheres of this country, economic, the social life, the arts, indicates that there is tremendous progress being made, and the growing middle class of the Negro is tremendous today, with a tremendous purpose and power.
Mr. Cup, but the progress is only being made to the position or status of a more prominent servant, and not a servant that is equal with his master and owning such thing as a place on this earth that he can call his own like his master.
Do you say that people like the Dr. Ralph Bunches and any number of other Negroes who have achieved fame and fortune are still servants in this community?
His fame and fortune is not his. That's the white man. He have achieved fame and fortune for the white man, not for his black man. All that the prominent, I would say, politicians, teachers, and clergy, all has worked forward to the help of the white man to achieve fame for him and his race, but not for themselves and their race.
Let me take you to another area, Mr. Muhammad. Our government is spending millions of dollars in various programs, mostly aimed at uplifting the Negro for better education, better job opportunity, a better share of this society. Now, isn't that a worthy commentary on the white man's role?
If the slave man is rich and richer, he can do better by his servant, his slave. But the slave is now, as I said, stands at the crossroads. He can go for himself. And why not the master teach him how to go for himself and provide him with the necessary means to go for himself and not keep petting him around his door?
Let's assume
a better suit of clothes.
Let's assume, Mr. Muhammad, that your separation policy comes into effect. We will ask the United States to give you a state large enough to take care of all the Negroes in this land. That would be about one-fifth of the territory.
Well, it's about 22 or more million.
And then you would ask the United States for 25 or 30 years, according to your book, The Message to the Black Man, to help operate this for 25 or 30 years.
Not 30. 25.
And also to give you a land that's fertile and rich in minerals so that the Negro can
make
a life from the earth.
Yes, sir.
A justifiable living.
Yes, sir.
How would you bring an economic system? How would you get the people to start a new state?
How would we get them to start? I'm asking you to further start.
You want the government to start the state for you, to build all the buildings and give you the education system, and give you the business.
We believe that you are obligated to start for start us off in such state according to your own civilization, or set up for your own civilization. the means that you have to set your own race up as an independent race here today, not what you had 400 or 500 years ago, but what you have today.
Let me pause for just a moment, Mr. Muhammad. We still have to interrupt the commercial on this program. Pause for a moment and be right back with the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Mr. Muhammad, while we're talking about this very unique proposition of yours as expressed in the message to the black man and, of course, in all your philosophy, it's interesting to note that Abraham Lincoln once proposed or thought that all Negroes, perhaps for their own best interest, should be moved to a separate state. And Garvey, a great leader of the Negroes many, many years ago, proposed that the Negroes have their own state. He was never too successful. And if I remember correctly, the communists in the early 30s, at the height of the Depression, urged that the Negroes be given their own state in an effort to capitalize on their following, I presume. None of these ever came to fruition or were ever successful or ever interested too many Negroes. How do you figure that you today can get Negroes to leave this country of theirs and go elsewhere?
Well, I will not have any power to do, I don't have any power to do any more than those teachers that preceded me on the same subject. I myself don't have any power of myself to bring about such change. But God is with me to bring it about. And the time is with me.
How has your God, Allah, manifested himself in this presentation?
He has manifested himself in the person of a man and with the knowledge of the end of the history that we have been in service to white people and the time that we should be separated from them. This knowledge was given by him. And he is the one that is backing it up. It is not me. I don't want you to look at me as nothing but a messenger. That's all I am, just a messenger to tell you what someone said to me. This that I have said to you concerning the separation, it is not said contrary to prophecy. The sayings of the prophets concerning a separation of the slave and his master. It is not contrary. But where I come in that there, I'm asking you if you would like to do something for yourself in admitting this justice from yourself, as this is nothing but justice, to give the slave something to go with if you have freedom. That America has never done for us. Our parents was never given anything to prove yourself. Now, the time has come that God himself will intervene to separate the so-called Negro or the lost members of their people, the black nation of the earth, from their once slave masters. This is the time, according to the prophetic sayings and writings of prophets, that we must be separated.
I just want to ask you one question along the separation theory before we move on. There are approximately 22 million Negroes in the United States. There is an estimated 100,000 members of these who belong to your sect. Now, how can you expect 100,000 to dominate 22 million who don't feel the same way that you do?
Oh, Mr. Cup, the number doesn't mean anything. We have history dating back that just a less people than that. Even the people that dominated in the world today, your own race, they was not started with even 100,000. Only 59,000 was used to make your own world. It don't make any difference about the number. It's only the ones that believing in it, honest about accomplishing the aim and the purpose.
If you had your choice of territory in this country, where would you select?
Well, I'm not saying this. I have said time and again, I will not say, you know, I would like to have a room in your house, whoever you are willing to give me a room there.
Mr. Muhammad, in your book, you also say that war between the non-whites and the whites is inevitable.
If you will permit me, Mr. Cup, I would like to go back here to this separation.
Again. All right.
We often has been misunderstood on this. We know that the prophesied says that we should be returned or will be returned to our own. But I have said here in this book, and almost weekly I'm saying something about it, that if America wants to ease their troubles, as this is the trouble that she is confronted with, it is the way. I don't care what someone might say or may say about the problem, but the problem of America, it is her slave. And the solution has been given. And this is just only a little twist of the solution that I am presenting to America today. That instead of all of this, I would say, mistreating the poor man, crying out today for more justice and better justice, better recognition, put him over here in some place. You have a house big enough to do so. Put him over here someplace to himself. Regardless to what he says, he knows the truth. You know that he should be somewhere to himself, because you will never agree to all that he demands you of. You cannot do so unless you want to become a subject slave yourself, or that you want to get in the same status that your slave is in, to yield to all of his demands. That is trying to respect a once slave as your equal. You can't do that and keep your respect in the world of civilized nation. But you can, I should say, stop trying to force the ideal in the slave that he is as good, he is as honored, he is as much as the master. This cannot be accepted as truth, even from the master.
Would you deny?
If you will just permit me, I will give you a chance. Yeah. By giving him a chance to sit in the house with you and talk with you and your family, or even marry your sons and daughters, that's not yet making him your equal. Or to prepare in your laboratories jobs for him, field factories, to give him a job, keep him at work. That is not making him your equal yet. He's still unequal. And it's a real ignorant thing to say he's my equal because I give him my social status with me. This is bad on the white man's part even to offer his slave integration in intermarriage. It only makes him worse in the eyes of the world, and his intelligence is lost. And his decency of his society is lost even by just offering the slave such opportunity. But if he would go and offer his slave a place over here to himself, say, boy, you have allowed me to use this slave. Boy, you have been the good old plowboy for me. Now I'm going to let you plow for yourself. Here's a mule. Here's a plow. I will furnish you plow tools until that you are able to pay for them or make them yourself.
You don't think that the white man really thinks of the Negro as boy anymore? That
I said that allow me to use the word, but he still calls them boys in many parts of the country.
You still refuse to acknowledge, though, that the tremendous progress of any number of Negroes in all the arts, in all the political world, in all the sports world, in the entertainment world, in education, These people are not the equal of the whites with their tremendous success?
Well, if he has made progress, then the weight of civilization for the white man, or in the civilization of the white man, well, why object then to him going doing this for himself? Let him make a way from now for himself.
But don't you feel, Mr. Muhammad, that this success is generated among the Negro youth who look up to these people as idols, and they themselves take a place in the society as successful people, inspired by their own people who have made successes?
Until he learned the truth. When he learned the truth of himself and of those who knew that he is worshiping, then he will go for himself, as I have the spirit to go for myself. I don't want to be a slave for you. I don't want you to use me as a servant. I want to be my independent self. I want some of this faith for my people like you. You came here and taken it by the knowledge and power of your own fathers from the Indian, and you made a great country out of it. Then you go back to my country and brings us here to serve you as, say, free labor. For 300 years we have did that for you, willingly or unwillingly. We did so, and our fathers. Now, for 100 years, you say we are free. And 100 years we are not free. We are so blind, deaf, and dumb, we still look forward to you to make our clothes for us, get the cotton and the wool, go and put it through the mills, and make cloth out of it for us, and we're still sitting looking at you do all of this for us.
Mr. Muhammad, if you'll pardon me, I must say that your interpretation of a Negro is far different than mine. You sound more like Governor Wallace when you say the Negro is deaf, dumb, and blind. You don't want to be linked with Governor Wallace.
No, I say that because God himself said it. It's written in the Bible and Quran. Wallace didn't write this.
No, but he announces and enunciates the same principle that you're enunciating.
Well,
the Negro is dumb.
Well, he's saying what God in the Bible says. The Bible says that we are blind and dumb and even deaf.
Well, many people certainly will disagree with anything that Wallace
Well, they disagree with God in the prophets then.
Only in your Bible, not in any other Bible.
It's in your Bible.
That the Negro is dumb and blind.
I got mine from you.
We'll have to pause for a moment, Mr. Muhammad, for a message, and we'll be right back. Mr. Muhammad, I know you want to say a few more words before on separation before we go to the next.
Mr. Cutler, I'm very anxious to finish what we started with on the separation. It is very nice and good of America to prepare educationally her slave that she once had in servitude. The education that we have acquired from white America, it helps us to begin for self anywhere on this earth that we may prefer to go or stay. If we are to stay here with you, we must stay in a separate part of America with you. And the education is still accepted. We need all the education, I must stop and say that, that we can of good education to help us to go for self. And as far as our reaction to what we have acquired in the way of education, it doesn't mean that we should now be satisfied to remain with you just because that we have now acquired more respect of self in the way of education and can do more better service for you than we have in the past. The thing of it is, since we have acquired enough to make a step out of the house of bondage where that our fathers was enslaved or put in bondage, we should now go, and you should help us to go and provide the necessary means for us to continue going in the way of self. This would also give you a great and a good name, the slave master sent his slave off with Lucifer a provision to keep going for himself. We need modern tools now. We don't need to apply our view. We need a tractor. And we need the land, certainly, that will provide a living and the necessity of life otherwise, such as buildings and other machineries. We want earth that we can go into as you have went into it and pull out of her treasures the necessary means for us to build a nation for ourselves.
But is this consistent, Mr. Muhammad, with your position? You were saying about the Negro doing things for himself. Then you say the government must turn around and give him all this territory and operate it for him for 20 years.
We think the government is obligated. We have given her 400 years. And now we want to go for ourselves. How are we to get started for ourselves if the slave master is not willing to provide the means for us to go free for ourselves?
In your position on separation, did you feel that the Supreme Court made a mistake in 1954 when it ruled that segregation must end in the public school systems?
No, I don't say the government made a mistake by saying that the kind of segregation that we have lived under should be terminated. I don't think she made any mistake there. But I do think the government is making a mistake now to try to hinder us from being separated. Since we have already lived under segregation for the past centuries, now we would like to be separated and live over here to ourselves, since we cannot get along with you in peace.
Let me take you into another area that we discussed at the opening of the show, Mr. Muhammad. That is your prediction in the book, The Message to the Black Man, that the whites and the non-whites inevitably must come to a war. Do you really feel that there must be a war between the races?
If you will not submit to the law of justice, freedom, justice, and equality, and submit to do good, certainly this is the time that good confronts us through the people and not evil. Your history teaches us that you have always warred. In Europe there was once a 100-year war, 30-year war, and they have continued a war history of your race ever since you had civilization.
But it isn't only the white man, Mr. Muhammad. Every man, white, red, yellow, has always engaged in war just as much as the white man.
History never gave us any knowledge of a war between the brown, yellow, black races before you.
The Chinese and the Japanese warred for many, many centuries, and certainly the blacks in Africa had their tribal wars, and the Muslims and Christianity had their religious wars. War has been a part of man ever since.
And in your sphere of ruling the people, since 6,000 years, you will mention what happens in the period of 6,000 years. Well, you are the boss there. You started there.
You maintain that the white man, according to this book, has been on this earth only 6,000 years.
Only 6,000
years. And that the black man was here many, many years, centuries before.
We don't have no book for it.
But the anthropological facts may differ with you, but this is, of course, according to your religion, right?
It depends on the man who does the analyzation of this past history of our people, bones and rocks and whatnot.
Your statement of inevitable war is so reminiscent of what Red China has been saying, that the yellow race and with the colored race will fight the white race, that it's a little frightening that you would be on the same beam, the same line of reasoning with him.
We cannot move ourselves if we are there by God himself. In the beginning, we are there, and you are there. In the very beginning, we cannot change nothing, and I'm not asking no one to accept any change that I would try and make, because I'm not trying to make one. Everything that I say concerning the truth whether it's war, whether it's separation of nations, I have it from Bible, Quran, from Jesus, from all the prophets in the past, from God himself, and I'm not talking myself. I'm talking what God and his prophets say.
Of course, Mr. Muhammad, Jesus, and all the other recognized religious leaders always preached love, not hatred.
I take for an instant, Jesus, he taught love of his Father. We use the name he used there. He taught that we should love the Father. We should love the word, the teachings of God. We should love the man that loves God and loves the teachings of God. This was Moses' teaching to Israel, was to love thy God with all thy heart, soul, might, and strength. But you are not taught to love the enemies, the nations that will not love your God and will not allow you to pass through or not allow you to settle in your own land. You should destroy that nation, our God will destroy them before you. This is Moses. Then the God goes so far as to say himself that there was two brothers, that he loved one and hated the other. God is the first hater. Jesus also seconds his father in these words, that unless you can hate your mother, brother, sister, father, pick up your cross and come follow me, you cannot be my disciple. You have to hate first there. He gives to us the old well-known teachings there in Matthew. I think it's around Matthew or in John 1. Anyway, it's there in his teaching. Here comes again some more of Jesus' teaching. He mentions this thing of the two brothers. One hated, another loved, to verify his own hatred of the evil people. He did not declare himself as being a lover of all men. He could not be the representative of God if he loved all people, because some people are evil. And a time of judging and letting out sentences to the evil and the contrary people of God is also on the page of history that these prophets put there for us to read and study. Moses did so, and now comes Jesus, who covers his sphere of delivering the message to Israel, a final message, and then denounces Israel as being enemies of God, and that a day of judgment is set for your execution. All of this is given right there of the Bible that is put in the words of Jesus. And we continue to have this, and then the beginning, we have it, Moses address Israel, and Deuteronomy there, saying to Israel, that in the very beginning, when we speak of separation, that God separated the sons of Adam. If God saw it more best than peaceful to separate these sons of Adam, brothers, these sons represent brothers. They can't live together. We separate the very sons of Adam and give them place on the earth and set boundaries for them that they cannot be entering in and out of the other country without permission. Boundary means that you must have permission to come in my part of the country. And now, all of this is set forth for us in the Bible in which the Christians say we should believe. If the Christian don't believe in his own Bible, the sayings of his own Bible, how can he preach to us to believe in it? If the Christian don't want to abide by the book that he represents is from the prophets of God and their sins. How can then he force us to believe that which he don't believe himself?
Hey, what up,
all right, yo, you keep doing what you're doing, all right?